My guest on the show today is the amazing Alex Terranova. Alex Terranova, one of my favorite ways to summarize somebody already. You're an anti-excuses coach. Is one of the things you coach on is anti-excuses. I love that. You're an author. You're a longtime podcaster. You are a baseball cap collector and rumored, which we are definitely going to dig in on, a rumored reality TV villain. How's that for a cliffhanger for the audience? What does that mean? So, Alex, thanks for being here today. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. It's probably the first time somebody's ever thrown in the hat and the reality show villain at the same time. So
you just pay me the royalties when that gets you to the next level. This is the best part of the show, and it all goes downhill from here, Alex. So, Alex, you're coming in to us from California.
Yeah, Sandy. I'm technically in Carlsbad, which if people aren't familiar, it's where the home of Legoland.
Amazing.
So, you know, if you have kids, probably for me, it's not that exciting to live near Legoland, but yeah, I'm like 30 miles north of downtown San Diego.
What if you love Legos like I do as an adult?
Do you? So I have an amazing Lego story that there was a murder and detectives involved in.
It's not necessarily let's kick off the podcast with a Lego murder story. I'm here for it.
I'm laughing, and it's actually not. So in my 20s, I think I was 25, 26. At the time I was managing bars, and my girlfriend at the time was like a waitress. And you're managing bars. She's a waitress. You got a lot of free time, right? We got a lot of free time. Our work doesn't come home with us. And one day we're at my parents' house. We open up this closet and we find all my Legos from when I was a kid, me and my brother's Legos. There's bins of them. And she, you know, we were very, like, it was a very youthful kind of relationship we had. And so we took all the Legos and we bring them back to my apartment. And I had this apartment in LA at the time that the living room was so big that there was like a space behind the couch that we didn't even know what to do with it. Well, now we knew what to do with it. So we dumped all the Legos on this space and we start built. What'd you say?
Ouch. If you step on them, it was behind the couch.
Nobody walks there. And we dumped the Legos all out and we're like, what do we want to build? And we come up with this idea to build Murderville. So every scene in this Lego town is a murder happening. And some of them, I would probably never reconstruct this. It was violent and offensive and, you know, not okay in a lot of ways. And we're having a lot of fun and no one sees us, right? So we build this thing and it sits back there and like something like that would happen. We just leave it there. Well, this is the bummer part of the story. So a little while later, all of a sudden, my roommate at the time, his grandparents were brutally murdered. This is not a joke. This really happened. And, you know, obviously all the things that come with that, detectives come to our house, you know, they always want to talk to family first, you know, to find out who did it. And on a positive note, the people who did it got caught, they got convicted, right? Whatnot. But the detectives come to our house one day and they want to talk to me because they're like, hey, where was your roommate the night of, you know, the murders? And I'm sitting there and I'm having this very casual conversation with this detective, which I'd never done before. And the other detective is like meandering around the apartment. He's looking at what books we read, what, you know, video games we play, looking at everything. And almost all the books on the shelf are John Grisham books. A lot of the scripts, because we were both writing at the time, were like action-y movie scripts. And then behind the couch is this Murderville Lego village.
Oh my God.
And my brain is a step ahead of this detective. And as he turns and sees and starts to lean in and look at it, I'm like, it's mine. That's not my roommate's. He didn't build that. He was, it's like, what are the chances, right? Like, what are the odds of something like that happening? But yeah, you know. We might also see this in a movie one day because my friend at the time he's actually a very successful writer in Hollywood and in the comic book space. And I've been told that he's incorporated that moment into something he's written. So you might see that one day.
It sounds like something like True Detective or something which is a new season coming out. Sure. I will say, Alex, that, you know, I've done about 140 some episodes now, definitely never had an opening like this. So it's great.
It's like True Detective. It's you know what I'm thinking. It's like True Detective meets like Curb Your Enthusiasm,
or like Brooklyn 9-1-1, or like Brooklyn Brooklyn 9-9. Yeah, right. Like Curb Your Enthusiasm, where it's like do. Oh wait, why is there a bunch of murder scenes behind the couch? Legos. Well, this is a great way for me to ask you the next question, which is, what's something you nerd out about? And I think we've already covered creating murder scenes with Legos. So I guess at this point we can just move right along, because that's probably the only thing you nerd out about, isn't it?
I think I nerd out about baseball hats.
Yeah.
And I think I actually, and it's not as bad as it used to be, and I'm really getting it reflected from my girlfriend. She points it out a lot. My mind is, it's really hard for me to be present on one thing. Like, podcasting, doing this is a little easier because I'm getting to interact. I'm getting the questions, but it's really hard. If you and I were just sitting at a table having a conversation, it's really hard for me just to be, my mind is like bing, 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 like just all over the place, thinking about a million things. And I notice things that are wrong everywhere. Like, I'll notice, well, we're driving by and I'm like, why is one of the light bulbs out in that movie theater's sign over, you know, over there, right? I notice these because my mind, it's constantly noticing things and constantly wondering. And I never realized it until I was with her, where she's like, you're the only person I've ever met that we're driving down the street and you'll be like, I wonder why they put mailboxes right on the edge where you could hit them with a baseball bat, right? She's like, who thinks about these things? And I think, like, I kind of nerd out on noticing all these weird things and decisions we've made about our world and our society that no one else is paying attention to.
Yeah, that's a really cool skill. I mean, you'd have made it for a great detective. I'm sure you've heard this before.
No, I don't. You know, I don't. I think that maybe I don't know enough about detectives. I feel like, well, look, I'm really good at escape rooms, so maybe.
but the idea of noticing details about our world, that, or a spy, like people that like can walk, you know, seen this in movies and television shows where like a CIA agent will walk into a room and be like, hey, like that guy over there is, you know, like, and then like, do you have a good memory?
I don't, from like necessarily, because there's so many things happening, I'll miss some things. But what I do notice I have a good memory is, if you dropped you and me in a city and just sort of like wander about, I would be able to find our way back from like, oh, I remember that sign. I remember that bear made out of wood. I remember we walked past. It kind of works like when it connects with things like that.
Yeah. It's a really cool skill. And it might also be really annoying to your girlfriend. Might be really, you know, she's like, babe, I don't want to hear any more skepticism and criticism about the world. Just be quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just random things you noticed. You know, it's like, why is that house set so far back off the street? Why wouldn't they move? Why wouldn't they build it forward and have more backyard? She's like, who's thinking about this as you just wander? Like, I don't do it on purpose.
Yeah. It's just part of who you are. All right. Let's talk about, something that's inside of your comfort zone that you know is outside of somebody else's. So we talked a little bit about some of the things you do. You do coaching work, which by definition means you've likely grown this over time. You've written a book, you're a podcaster, so you're not afraid of getting out there. At least I would assert you're not. You've been on a reality TV show, which we're going to get into later. So we know that that's not something that you're unwilling to do. So yeah, like, what's something that you love, you dig on, you like to do that, and you know other people are like, absolutely not, that is not for me.
Well, I think you touched on a lot of the things, but I think the piece that would make me different is that I'm willing to share unfinished, untested creativity. Like, you know how sometimes writers will like, I'm not sharing my work until it's done. No, I'll share it like 5 minutes in. And I'm very, like, it might hurt if you give me, you're like, that's terrible, you need to redo that. But there's something about the creative process that I actually feel good. Like, I like the energy of putting it out there. So I will throw ideas, creative things, things I'm working on out to the world or to my partner, whoever. And I think a lot of creatives don't do that. They really want things to be polished and ready before they present them. And I think it's because they can't be with, it's uncomfortable to be with what you get back. And I actually love what you get back. I think it actually helps me further the idea.
Yeah. You're reminding me of a conversation I had with somebody last month, and they were, it was like a team building thing. We were talking about our superpowers. And I said that, and it sounds like you and I have the same thing. I said, one of my superpowers is I'm not afraid to take risks, and it also doesn't need to be perfect.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to just get out and like do it and try and improvise and iterate. And I enjoy that process, which what people told me, they're like, wow, that is a real superpower, because usually either you get one or the other, but not both. Sounds like you're similar too. And I'm not a writer. I don't like writing. I do speaking and I do like podcasting, but that's a really cool thing. Cause my experience with like coaching people in the creative space or a lot of friends, it really is. There's a lot of, I'm going to label it as perfectionism of like, oh, we can't possibly show this thing to the world until it's like 99% of the way there. And what happens sometimes is then that what you think is great actually stinks.
Totally.
As opposed to getting that iterative feedback throughout.
I think it's also how I do relationships. I don't really want to sit down and just talk like fluff. Like if you and I were hanging out, I'd rather be like, hey, read this thing that I wrote. Or I think there's more intimacy and depth often in sharing things like that than us just being like, hey, did you see that game last night or what's going on this week? And look, I don't walk around with things I'm writing, like sharing them. You know, if you and I went to lunch, I wouldn't just like make you read something I'm working on. But if it came up and you were like, oh, that sounds cool, I might be like, do you want to read it? Like,
yeah,
you know, and I think there's also something that is, I think this took a long time. If you give me bad feedback, you just helped me improve. If you give me good feedback, it's actually exciting and I want to put more energy into it. So I kind of win either way. And I think that definitely like pulls me forward. I also then get to hear your idea, right? I get free brainstorming from people that might be able to give you gold that other people are, you know, you're doing it in isolation and you miss what you or I or anyone else might have to offer them.
Yeah. We're going to move along in a second, but I do want to, is this something you've grown into? Because what you're talking about is not people's usual pattern for feedback. Most people I know, that is not their pattern of feedback.
So it's hard. I think it depends. In areas that I felt confident in when I was younger, I think I was okay with that. When I was in the restaurant business, I would come up with food concepts, drink concepts, menu concept, things like that. And I would share them with people that were close to me because I felt really confident in that area of my life. Now writing, let's just say anything outside of that, I would have said the opposite. I would have been really hesitant because, I mean, I remember being a kid and when I would turn in a paper, you know, anything for school, it would come back and it looked like the teacher slit their wrists and just bled red ink all over it. And my confidence in my ability to communicate and write and those kinds of things in school, like educational, systematic kind of things, at a really low confidence. And I struggled with reading and writing and that. So when I wrote my book, it was actually a huge breakthrough to be able to have an editor like give me feedback and not interpret the feedback as I'm a big idiot who shouldn't be writing a book, to really see that their job is to help me. And as the writer, my job isn't to be the best editor. You know, that's right. They're two different jobs.
It's two different jobs. It's why writers have editors and why editors aren't usually writers. At least they're not the creative part.
I will say, I want to add this too. In the world we live in, it does create a challenge because of social media, things happening really fast, right? And I'm not a good editor. My strength is not grammar, you know, punctuation and syntax. And so that I'll often find myself feeling shame or a little beat up when I'll write something that I really want to get up on social media, right? It could be long, short. And then somebody that I know will be like, hey, you got like, your sentences don't make sense. You spelled words wrong. And that used to be a really hard thing to be with because I was like, oh, I can't share in the way I want to share and communicate because the weakness that I have shows up in a way that makes me feel really bad about myself and also doesn't communicate what I'm trying to do. And then I recently found trying to find solutions to this. I've like played with the idea of like having somebody like on call that could help me, like paying somebody to do that. I recently found Grammarly. I don't know if you know, if you're familiar with Grammarly and paid for their robust system. And now I just write everything in Grammarly and then I copy and paste it out of there, which is actually freeing. Cause look, there might still be some mistakes, right? It's okay. But they're not to the degree that would would kind of limit my ability to be who I wanted to be in the world.
Oh, do I know Grammarly? It saved my butt for 2 years. My affiliate link for Grammarly is in the show notes. Please go click on it. Maybe we'll get them the sponsors up. No, Grammarly is it's a game changer.
Yeah.
Game changer for me too. All right, Alex. So other side of that, what's something you don't like doing or that is really uncomfortable for you? And you know, other people that are like, I dig it. Let's do it.
There's two and they're so obvious. Dancing and karaoke. So uncomfortable. Like I have obviously done both. And so uncomfortable. Like so. And look, if I'm in my house and I'm just like dancing, it's fine. But you know how people are always like, no one's paying attention to you. Well, every time I'm hanging out with people, somebody's like, hey, look at that guy dancing over there like an idiot. Or
you're at karaoke. They're like, they're paying attention to me.
You're at karaoke and it's like, oh, who, that guy, that person is terrible. And I'm, and they're like, yeah, I'm good. I'm not.
Yeah. People are actually paying attention. All right. So I have a karaoke question for you.
Yeah.
If we were going to do karaoke right now, which we're not, because this is not a karaoke podcast, and I don't think anybody would stay tuned in here based on what you just shared or listening to me, I'm not a singer either. If you and I were out with some friends and we got you either some liquid courage or you just wanted to do it and you were going to sing a song, do you have a song that you would be willing to stand up and sing for a group of people?
Are we singing together or is it just me by myself?
We could sing together. We could do it together.
I mean, I'm thinking if we did it together, maybe like I could show you the world from Aladdin and, you know, we can fight over who plays, you know. No, that's a joke. You know, honestly,
I was like, wow, that's a choice.
No, honestly, I think this is the thing that I don't understand about karaoke that other people get. There's good karaoke songs and there's songs that you should not be doing karaoke to unless... Right. And so for different true. Degrees, some of it's based on pace. Some of it's based on the range of the music. I have noticed I don't know how to pick a karaoke song. So I might pick a song based on music I like that you sing to in your car, that you're singing with the pace of the artist, you know, at the cadence with the music and the rhythm. And it's different when you're doing karaoke. So I feel like if I had to, and I wanted to, I would probably lean on somebody who's like who's the expert karaoke person of the group. That could be like, this is a good karaoke song to do because it just hasn't gone well for me in the past.
Yeah. I can help you out with this a little bit. If you ever do find yourself in this situation is male country music. Most men can generally do an okay job, even if you don't like it. Yeah. And I'm doing a public service announcement for everybody listening. Nobody should be doing Adele or Queen or Whitney or Mariah or these like, or Michael Jackson. Nobody should be trying to do those karaoke because it's nearly impossible to sound good. I have heard a few times where like Marvin Gaye, where people like singing, I'm like, it's just so darn perfect as it is that there's no way it's just not going to go well. But then there's other songs you're like, hey, I'd love to hear it. Like the rousing ones that like you sing at a bar that people like get up and sing. But some of these songs, like nobody should ever do these at karaoke, just period. It just doesn't sound as good. It's never going to sound good.
I bombed a country song before. And it was mostly because of pacing. Like it was like, I think it was like a Chase Rice or like, you know, more like a poppy country singer. And like the pace of his song would be like really fast and really slow. And
when
I was listening to it, it's like, I knew every word of the song, but when you take him out and it was rough.
You're definitely a karaoke rookie. I can tell. Good thing, you know, good thing we all do different things and you're not a karaoke person. All right. So, Alex, moving along here to talk a little bit about speaking. So if we give you 5 minutes, let's say that everybody in the world was listening to us on this podcast. You had 5 minutes to deliver like some Alex wisdom, things that you want people to know, a game changer, is like your 5 minute mini TED talk. What would you talk about and what would be your call to action for us as your audience?
I think it's the thing that has been really prevalent in my life currently, which is that we have the way we set up like goals and results backwards. So if you, here, let's look at it through like a sports metaphor. If you and I were on a baseball mm-hmm. team and we win the championship and that's the goal of the team, but the whole season we're basically miserable. We hate our teammates. We're not enjoying playing. Our body hurts. At the end of that year, when we win that championship, we're going to get a pretty great amount of joy for a moment in time, popping those bottles, celebrating maybe at the parade. And then it's going to be over. And we're going to have to start all over again. And we spent that whole season in suffering and in misery. Like 99% of the time was actually unenjoyable and miserable. So we got the goal, but we got like 1% of actually enjoyment of the experience. I think that that's a really twisted way that we set up our reality, that most of us are like goal first. What's the thing we want? And then we go all in on that. And we go goal. And we're like, how do we get there? And we forget about what's the experience, what's the actual journey and the ride going to feel like. And I think it would serve us as human beings to flip it and say, what do we want our journey and experience to be like? Right. And we get to make that up. For me, a lot of times it's adventure, it's play, like it's a good time. And then what I notice is, okay, so now I still have to create what I want. So I want it to feel like this, which is going to be 99% of what I do, of the experience that I have. Now, at the end of that journey, if I don't get the championship, but I'm like, man, Jason, that was the most fun team I ever played on. We had a great year. I had such a good time. I might be a little bummed that we didn't get the championship, but I'm going to look back and really, I think I'm going to really embrace it. And I'm probably going to want to do it again. And I'm going to have more enthusiasm about doing it again. And if we did win the championship, then it's like sprinkles on the sundae. It's already great and it's an extra. So I would want people to take away that, hey, your experience isn't a result. It's not an output. It's actually the input that drives your life. And at the end of your life, you're going to look back and you're not going to think about all the results you got. You're going to think about, what was my journey like?
Yeah. I really like that. Before we go to a commercial break here really quick, I was thinking out loud, or I'm going to think out loud with you right now. So people listening, let's say that we have a screenwriter. There's a screenwriter listening to this episode and their result is they want to get that script picked up, or one of their script picked up for, let's make it up, a reality television show. Sorry, that's unscripted. No, wait, that is scripted. Sorry. Whatever it is, doesn't matter. And they're listening. They go, well, I want to get picked up. Money, fame and fortune, potentially get to see my craft on the screen. How would you relate something like writing a script, like the journey of writing a script? And I'm, partially this question is self-serving because I'm not a writer. So I'm really curious your perspective on the creative process and not being attached to the commercial part of it on the end, or the thing that like actually has it come to life. Because I mean, like how many scripts get picked up in television and film? It's like less than 5%, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I in my 20s, I've actually written probably about 10 like feature movie scripts and some like spec scripts for TV. It's great because I didn't know what I was doing. To your thing, I was bartending, I was managing restaurants. I was then living in LA, and one of my roommates was an actor and one was a director, director, writer. They're both doing, one is now a professor at Ohio State teaching theater, and the other one is living out his dream writing comic books and TV shows and getting paid good money and succeeding. I kind of watched them and was like, man, this seems like fun. And every day I would write. And it never actually affected me that I didn't sell anything, because I wasn't, it was this thing that I did for fun that I really enjoyed. And when it started to be like with my book, when I was like, oh, I'm going to write this book, it all became about the result. I couldn't get it written. I couldn't get it out. I didn't have the discipline, because the journey, the process was miserable. That when I let go of, you know what, screw this, it's not about how many copies get sold. This is like, cause I want to write a book. Why don't I enjoy this and let my thoughts flow? All of a sudden it started to pour out of me. And then it's like, now looking back, right? I don't have, I haven't sold millions of copies of my book, and I don't care. I had a great time writing it. It exists. It's sitting here on my desk. I love looking at it. It feels really good. And I think ultimately that's what we can control, right? We can't control if, you know, Fox buys our script or if we get cast in that role, but we can control the experience that we have. And I think if you create the good experience, you're going to want to write another script or go out for another, right? You'll create more opportunities.
Yeah. I love that. Thanks for sharing. That's a real TED Talk topic. Hmm. Like, it's not just about the result. It's about, I mean, it's like the journey destination, a little bit cliched, but the idea that a lot of the things we do, it's all what's the end goal, but like what's actually the thing that's so enjoyable inside of it. Yeah. With that, Alex, we're going to take a brief commercial break. We'll be right back after this.
The Talking to Cool People podcast is brought to you by Jason Frizzell Coaching. Jason works with amazing people who are looking to find and develop their passion and purpose and create their journey to wherever it is they want to go. Check us out at jasonfrizzell.com, Facebook, or on Instagram. Jason loves hearing from anyone who thinks it would be cool to connect, to be coached, or to be a guest on our show. Email him at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com or DM him on Facebook and Instagram. And now, back to some more amazing conversation on Talking to Cool People.
All right, Alex, we're back. Probably about time I ask you about the reality TV villain. You know, it's in your bio, and I know a tiny bit about this. So what's the question I want to ask you? The question is, it's more of a request, but bordering on demand. Tell us about what it means to be a reality TV villain. What does this mean? What is this cryptic thing that we are going to now learn about and record for for posterity and for the internet for all time?
I mean, look, it exists. You can find me out there in the reality TV show universe. I wish it was more like the Marvel universe, but
yes, the link will be in the show notes. Trust me, it'll be there. I will find this.
When I was 28, I was running a bar in Venice Beach, and my girlfriend at the time, same girlfriend who I built this Lego village with, would watch Food Network all the time, always on in the background of our house. And I had my desk set up in a place where it was like out of my peripherals, I could see and hear, you know, Food Network. And often I would turn and be like, oh, these people are terrible. Right? Like they always just seemed like it was like, it's like Bobby Flay's not terrible, but Bobby Flay was like Mr. New York. And you had like Guy Fieri, who was kind of like your, you know, your Midwest race car driving kind of, like they all fit these like stereotypes.
Yeah.
And some of them I just thought were like awful at what they did and not that entertaining. And so many of the shows on Food Network, and again, this is, you know, 13 years ago, I thought were like pretty terrible shows. And I didn't understand how she watched this, but I was in the restaurant business and I never thought all that much about it. And as I would listen, I would be like, man, I could do this so much better and it'd be so much more fun. And at the time, I also thought, where's the, like, you know, there wasn't that kind of cool rock star, tatted up young guy personality. And so I started to audition for shows and, I would go on all these websites, you know, like Fox and Food Network, and find what shows they were doing, and I would audition. And I had, at the time, because I was trying to open my own place, I had some concepts. So I had a lot of things I could work with in this world. And I got cast. I'd been actually in the running for multiple like random MTV shows when I was in my 20s that I kept like bowing out of. I was like, oh, this isn't going to be a good look. And I would kind of drop out at the last minute. But I got cast on this show called America's Next Great Restaurant. It was done by the people who do Top Chef, but it was like the concept was food entrepreneurs, people that want to have their own restaurant. They don't have to be a chef. And they'll build the concept. They'll hire the chef. And then Bobby Flay, the guy who started Chipotle, Curtis Stone. Like there was a committee of judges, and basically they were going to
like invest a Shark Tank for restaurants.
Yeah. They were going to invest in the winner's restaurant. The first-ish episode, when we were all filming, there was a guy who was clearly the villain, but he went way far, like on the first episode, which they didn't air, he said some like pretty offensive, racist kind of things, and they like booted him off right away. Like
that's a good
like,
start.
Yeah. They were not having it, and he was clearly the jerk of the show. And I remember when he got booted, thinking like looking around and going, "There's no bad guy here. There's nobody that's gonna like, you know, talk shit and ruffle feathers and poke the bear." And I remember thinking like, I know how to do this restaurant thing. The challenge of the restaurant thing is my comfort zone. For a lot of these people, they were not restaurant people. So they were really focused and serious. I was like, let's have fun with this. And I wasn't a coach at the time. I wasn't thinking about experience, but I really remember I'm not going to get to control who wins this show, but I am going to get to control the experience I have. And I was like, let's have fun. And the way I decided to have fun was to kind of be a jerk. And it was basically like talking a lot of, you know, shit and poking at people and playing that game. And the friend of ours that told you that, or not, well, that the friend of ours that we have, she was actually the one that was like, you should put that in your bio. Because I've taken, if this was a video podcast, we could share it, but I've actually taken clips of the show and like put them together. And so it's like the highlight reel of me being a jerk. Which I think is great because I've totally transformed my life so much. I would never be like that to other people now. But it's kind of, you know, it's, I often say I'm a reformed or recovering asshole, and there's the evidence of it.
There it is, Alex. And there we are, no more mystery, no more cryptic references to this thing. Yes, I am going to find something, or maybe you can send me something, and we will definitely put it in the show notes for those who want to see this. I haven't seen it, so I am definitely going to watch. This is going to be entertaining for me as well.
Yeah, there's. I tried at the time. I was trying to make a reality career out of. Didn't work out. But you know, there's still time. You know, maybe I'll make a comeback. That I'll make a
reality television star.
Yeah,
that's what kids, as little kids, dream about. I have a question about auditions for reality TV before we move on here.
Sure.
What do you audition for? It's not like you're going in and reading a script. What are they? I mean, looking at how you look and how you carry yourself. Like what?
Yeah.
So what do you do in an audition?
So I've probably done about 5 or 6. But basically, in the way that it was when I had done them, was you sit in front of you're sitting in front of a camera. And they're basically interviewing you. They're like, oh, tell us about, you know, this is pretty good. When I was in my 20s, I got cast. Somebody approached me and was like, hey, we want you to be on this MTV show. The show was called I Want to Be You. And the thing was, there was somebody that knew me who was like, I want to be more like Alex. And they told them about me. And then those people came and recruited me. This show actually went on MTV. I'm so glad I didn't do it because I would have looked like it would have not been a good look. But when they brought me in, they sat me there. They're like, why would somebody want to be like you? What do you do that is, you know, and I didn't even know who the person was at the time, but they were like, oh, how do you pick up women and how do you make money? And they just asked you questions, and they were basically looking to see if you had personality. If you're going to say kind of wacky or off the wall stuff, right? Are you going to bring drama or are you going to be boring? And at that time in my life, I loved to bring the drama.
Yeah.
Some might say I still do, but it's a,
you're like at that time in my life, and your girlfriend's like, in that time in your life. Yeah, exactly. I want to, I want to hear a little bit more about you. Before we do that, I do want to mention something about myself and my wife, who's been a guest on this show and is coming back here shortly. She was guest number 1 in season 3, one of my top downloaded episodes. So I think that should tell me something, that maybe it's time to hand the reins over to her, because people are much more interested in listening to her than just me here with other guests. But we have been told so many times that we would be amazing on The Amazing Race because we're both super competitive, and we're very entertaining when we're competitive, and we like to work as a team, but we're also just wildly competitive. So we've been told that. So if you know anybody at The Amazing Race and CBS, wherever that is, you hit me up. I think we could do it. Although it'd be a little hard with 2 young kids and, you know, to go around the world for however many days they do.
It'd be way more amazing, Alex, if they made you strap the kids to you and you had to do the whole thing with
a 1.5-year-old with a toddler. Yeah. That would be really fun.
It's also complimentary that they're not, you know, saying like you guys should be on Temptation Island, right? Like it's really a compliment. That's often the show I think me and my partner should be on, is like, we should go on Temptation Island and see how that goes. I don't think we should do that. I think it would be a terrible idea.
That is funny. Oh, that's so good. Well, what else, Alex, maybe five more minutes on you. Like, what else would you like us to know about you? So we know you're a restaurateur, you're an entrepreneur in reality TV, you cap collector, you live in San Diego now, written a book, you work with lots of people in your coaching practice. Like, yeah, what else do you want us to know about you?
So something that I think that is really fun that I think that your audience would get a kick out of is something I created this year, I guess, with my girlfriend and partner, Evan. We created a project and a experience called Your Love Adventure, which I don't know if you know this about me, but it's the way we met. So about a year ago, roughly a year ago, I was pretty, you know, I'm following my own advice. Like, I was pretty over dating. Wasn't like I couldn't find a date or they weren't sometimes good, but I was just like over the process. I was over the like wasting money on people you didn't have a good time with, hanging out with people you didn't actually enjoy the conversation. Just the whole swiping, right? Like the whole thing just felt like not enjoyable anymore. And over a couple of drinks with my cousin, we kind of came up with this joking idea of, what if I didn't pick who I dated? What if I turned over the reins to my dating life to a few of my friends and let them choose who I dated? Well, this quickly went like kind of a little bit viral. And I created a landing page, and women essentially applied to go on a 2-week trip with me to Tulum for a friend's wedding. And five of my friends got to choose who the winner was. And it, when I say it went viral, I was on podcasts. I was actually on the local news in San Diego. Yeah. Interviewed about this. Evan won this contest, and Evan and her and I have been together since and creating a life together. I mean, this is who I'm going to be with.
This is it.
And we, you know, as her mom says, you won Alex in a contest. And as I often say, she won me in a contest. But we, at the end of this, we were like, there was something really unique about this, right? Something about how I created it almost unintentionally really worked. It wasn't an accident. And what we realized when her and I, Evan is a very successful dating and self-worth coach for women. So when we looked at this together, and I looked at like the pieces about integrity and commitment and experience and authenticity, and she came in from like, why did this work from a dating kind of perspective? We were like, wait, there's some pillars here that got accidentally created in the formatting, the creation, the way we set it up, having the committee of friends. And this year we created a program called Your Love Adventure, which anyone go to yourloveadventure.com. And we just ran our first beta program, and all three women created an adventure and a trip, and men applied. It happened to be women this time that all signed up to do this project with us. Men applied. Two of the three women are with the men that won they're dating
so
now.
Cool.
One decided like, hey, like she had all these breakthroughs and decided not to move on with the guy, but they did take a trip together. But we recreated dating in a way. It's like, hey, no swiping. It's like all about intentionality. It's all about the experience you want to have. And then also figuring out, you know, what are the habits, the behaviors, the patterns that are creating your dating life to go the way that it's always gone, which was the thing that got broken up for me. Kept dating same kinds of people. And when I turned it over to my community of judges, they picked somebody I would not have picked for myself, right? Evan's great. And I'm so grateful that I'm with her. And like, we're so happy. It's the best relationship, but we wouldn't have chosen each other based on habits, behaviors, and automatic, you know, like autopilot kind of thinking.
Yeah, that's super cool. I'll put a link in the show notes on that. That's a really interesting concept. Well, a lot of times our friends know more about us than we do when it comes to that. Like, they see more for us. It's really good. I have to bring this up because I'm a huge Curb Your Enthusiasm fan. Did you watch this last season?
Love it. Yeah. Oh,
this is the reverse Mary Ferguson.
Dude, this was happening. We were together when Mary Ferguson came out, and I was like, you got to be kidding me.
You're like Mary Ferguson.
Yeah. Yep. If
people don't know what we're talking about, go watch season 11 of Curb. It's brilliant.
Leon's the best character too. So
Leon's the best. All right, Alex. What would you like to ask me that I can answer for you and for everybody listening?
Who's the coolest person you've ever talked to?
Oh man, I cannot do that here live on this show or over in my life.
We're going to make you, we're going to make you the villain of your own show.
I know you're going to make me the villain. Well, I'm going to be a little political here. I'm going to actually answer this in a way of what I think the person I've talked to that probably has done the coolest stuff.
Hmm.
Like if you looked at them externally, like what have they done or what do they do?
Yeah.
And by cool, I think this is probably the most interesting. This is a gentleman named Ray. He's Irish. He also fellow restaurateur in New York City. But the thing he did last year, and I'm going to have him back on to give us an update, that I just, for me, was just fascinating. And just, you talk about outside of people's comfort zones. He decided, he's an adventure athlete as well. And he and two other dudes were going to row from New York City to Ireland in a rowboat.
Oh.
In a rowboat. This boat had no engine on it. And I just thought that was so, it's just so unique.
Yeah.
And we talked about this in the pod. It was from March of 2021, if anybody wants to listen. And I asked him, I said, what in the world has you want to do this? He's like, because I can. It's kind of like if you ever watch like Alex Honnold, the free climber, like free solo, or these people that just do these things because they can.
Yeah.
What happened to them? Because they did have electronics and GPS, but just rowing. So they had to train for like 6 months. These dudes are crazy. Three dudes. They slept on it. They had solar panels. They had to pack the food because they were not getting resupplied on the Atlantic Ocean. And the Atlantic Ocean, you know, obviously has crazy currents. It has big ships.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening is they ended up actually taking on water and getting rescued by a barge about like, I think 25 days into the trip. And it was going to be like a 60 some day trip.
Whoa.
They got caught in a storm. And I just thought that was just such a cool and also like wildly unique thing that I was blown away. And I got connected to him through a mutual friend. He's like, hey, you should talk to my buddy Ray. He's doing this cool thing. I'm like, what's he doing? He's like, it's something to do with like a boat. I'm like, all right. And I talked to him. I'm like, that's not just something to do with the boat. That's literally insane. To me is like insanity.
Yeah.
They all survived. I mean,
What are you going to tell you? What are you going to tell your wife now when that she knows she's not the coolest guest you've had on?
Because my wife is the coolest in terms of the goal setting and vision that we talked about. Vision and goal setting. My wife's like a vision and goal setting genius. Practical cool. She would probably agree. If knowing my wife, if you listen to that episode, it's really good. But she would probably say, yeah, I'm not as cool as rowing across the Atlantic Ocean.
Man, I don't even know if that sounds cool. I think that sounds like, I mean, it's like I have respect for somebody that
would do that. And it's like a whole new level. It's literally like when I was watching the movie Free Solo, I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Like, what is the thing? Yeah. I mean, the truth of it is, Alex, this is the honest truth. I'm not being political. I can't narrow it down to one. I've had so many interesting conversations, so many interesting people where you have people, then they do like, they're an author. And then you find out things about them. You're like, that's insane. Like I had somebody on who wrote a speech for President Kennedy. Wow. No idea before they came on. Or people have come on. I've had a couple of military people on. My buddy Steve Drum, who's been on twice, Navy SEAL, like you hear. And then we end up talking about Dead & Co concerts for an hour, like not an hour, but like for 10 minutes. He's done amazing things, and a lot of those things he actually can't talk about. But I find that's the whole point of the show, is I find everybody does cool stuff.
Yeah.
You know, even reality TV villains. Very cool. I think that's very cool. I think I could be a good villain if I could get over my people pleasing.
Yeah.
But I probably want to be the guy who everybody likes.
Yeah. No, that would be like, so I feel like that'd be so boring. I think like most, there were those people too, you know, there was the people who were like really helpful. Everybody, they wanted, you know, they want everyone to like them. There were the people that were really focused. Everybody really, I think this is actually, you know, you and I were talking about this before we hit record. Like I shared with you, like the consequences of cool, but we like to put ourselves in boxes, right? Most people do it unconsciously. Oh, I'm the pretty person. I'm the athlete. I'm the leader. I'm the follower. Like we don't even know that we're, and then we step into the roles that we play. And sure. When I consciously looked at the room and went to try to get the most attention, what role should I play? Right. And I looked at the room and the room was like, oh, that doesn't look like there's a villain. Villains always get a lot of airtime. That makes sense. Like I should, right. It was like a very conscious choice.
Smart.
And yeah. And it wasn't always fun. It wasn't always, I mean, at times, right. People are getting mad at you. Like there was a guy on the show who wanted to fight me. Right. And he was not somebody I wanted to be fighting. And right.
His name is Bobby Flay.
Yeah, no, like, no, Bobby Flay. I'd fight Bobby Flay.
You'd fight Bobby, guy, yeah.
Yeah, I'd fight Bobby Flay. but this guy is not somebody I wanted to be fighting. Like, I it probably wouldn't have gone well for me. But I stayed in the villain role of like, it was like, hey, come fight me. This, like, that I win, right? If I'm triggering people to the extent that they want to fight me, I'm actually doing the role really well and winning. Cause now I'm in, it's almost like Gary Payton, Reggie Miller, that like getting in people's heads was kind of how was playing. And the thing that people didn't even realize was certain, if you pick on certain people, it triggers other people. Right.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If I picked on certain people, then other people had to like come and rescue and save. Whereas if I picked on those other people wouldn't have like even noticed. So it was like, it was very strategic. Like, I don't know where this kind of part of me came from, but I think into that point,
very conniving.
Yeah. And even in the, you know, I loved this concept of your show because I'm so attached to like, we as a society think of people as like, cool is a good thing. And cool looks so many different ways. You know, I think like Johnny Depp and, you know, is somebody who we would think of as cool. And that guy's had a lot of problems. Like maintaining the image of cool can be really costly and really expensive and not serving. And I think you could interchange the word cool with hip or successful or whatever. And often that thing that we think is like a good thing to be like referred to as becomes a trap, and it can look in so many different ways. And I even think in that reality world, that was my way of being cool, was like the rebel, the bad guy. The bad guy was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You probably got to play out some inner fantasies by doing that too. it does sound, I'm thinking out loud. I'm like, that does sound pretty fun just to be like a troll on television and like pick on the underdogs and then get other people fired up. Like that is definitely something I'm interested in. I'm just jealous, Alex. Now I'm just jealous.
You're making me want to
Alex,
turn my life around and go the other direction, go back to the dark side.
Exactly. You're like, so I've got a great relationship. Things are going well. I've written a really powerful book. I have a podcast. I'm throwing it all away, man. I'm going back into the reality TV game. I hope to see you on Bravo sometime getting a drink thrown in your face.
Okay, wait, here. This, I know that you want to probably wrap up soon, but I actually have a fantasy. And me and Evan talk about this of, I really want to have a drink thrown in my face in a public place, not the glass, just the liquid.
Of course.
But Evan and I talk about like, we should go to a public place and like act out, just make it all, just role play it. Cause it's probably, you know, I'm probably
so just like those shows that are just fake.
Yeah. But it's mostly to see like, what would, you know, if you and I were sitting at a bar and Evan was sitting next to me and it looked like you and I were hanging out, and then I turned and said something and she threw a drink in my face, what would the bartender do? What would the other people, would somebody ask me to leave?
It's a great experiment.
I just think that like, there's something that fun about like playing around with things. And I don't want, again, I'm not, I've moved so far away from the dark side. I don't want to go back. But I think someone's like playing out, I don't know if you've ever read like Existential Kink or you know about the book, like there's a stuff about our darkness, like our darkness, our shadow, the things that maybe aren't so nice about us. It serves us in a lot of ways. And so many of us like really downplay it and push it down.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. We're gonna have you back on, Alex. We got a lot to talk about.
I don't know if I just took you on like a whole tangent that you were like, wait, no.
No, no, it's great. I also love the next question, which is coming because it's it would have been really funny if I would have asked you this ahead of time and then you said that answer. What's the thing you're most proud of? That'd have been amazing. You're like, what I'm most proud of is the, my dark side and existential kink. And no, but yeah, what is the thing that you are most proud of?
I'm definitely, it's my book is the thing I'm most proud of. Think it's the most like unpredictable thing I think about for me, like based on who I, as a kid who grew up with, you know, learning disabilities that made it. So I didn't really read a book until I was, in my 20s, and I didn't even really read. I read like, you know, some John Grisham books, like I mentioned, but I read now insanely, but reading was really hard for me. So I didn't read in school. I kind of slid under the radar. Writing was a mess and hard for me, retaining information in that way. And so I actually had a teacher in high school who said to my mom at some point, if he doesn't figure like learn how to write, he's like never going to go to college, he'll never get a job. And I didn't remember that. My mom reminded me of that when I wrote my book. She was like, you should send that lady a copy with a nice little note written inside of it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm not surprised. I've had quite a few authors on, man, and I work with some authors on the branding side, and man, it is a labor of love. Like, it is a lot to write a book. I have a world of respect for authors. The I don't know, hundreds of thousands of hours you don't see, like iterating, the editing process, the marketing of books. It's a thing. It's a whole thing. And I just learned about this a couple of years ago. I have some friends that are authors, had a bunch of authors on here. And again, because of the branding work I do, I'm like, you got to really want it. And it's also not a good business model.
No.
99.9% of the population, if you're not famous, you're probably not going to make a living writing a book. No. You have to be like really up there. Yeah, that's awesome. All right, Alex, what are you afraid might be true about you?
So my biggest fear is that I'm a disappointment. And that, have you ever heard the saying, like, you know, you don't date potential? You ever heard that before?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
And
yeah,
I've never had that said about me, at least that I know of, but it really resonated when I heard it the first time, said about somebody else. It like so resonated as, even though I've struggled with things in my life, like on a really personal level, I've never been without food or shelter, right? I've been very privileged and fortunate in a lot of ways. On an internal dynamic relationship with myself, I've struggled a lot. And that fear of like, I'm going to let my family down. I'm going to let, you know, my grandparents down, you know, I'm going to let these people down that really set me up and supported me in a lot of ways. I'm going to let down Evan. I'm going to let down my clients, is a recurring thing, that I do, right? I do the work as a coach. I have a coach. I go to therapy, right? I do all the things, but it's like, it feels like almost like a super villain in my story that is to be battled and overcome at some point. That could be true, that I am a disappointment.
Yeah. So second part of this question, what do you do to compensate for that?
Probably
welcome everything. To therapy. I think you're like my life.
Yeah. I hear that in two different ways, right? One of the ways is like, what am I trying to do about it? Which is like having a coach, therapy, personal development, right? Like anything to try to say that, hey, it's not true, right? No one's a disappointment. Yeah. No one is that. And even the definition of disappointing based on what, right? Like who defines it? What's the metric?
It's subjective.
Totally. But I do think that a lot of the things I've done in my life were about proving the other side of it, you know, like doing things. My specialty in the restaurant world was opening restaurants. It's probably one of the hardest things to do in the restaurant world, like train, open, like do all, like it's absolute chaos. And it was my favorite thing to do. And I think I loved it because the odds are you're going to fail. And so I only had an upside to go. And I think the same thing with, you know, a coaching practice, the way I want to live, like, you know, the way I want to live my life, where I want to live, writing a book. I like kind of like being, choosing things and being on the side of like, it probably won't work out, the underdog, like, it's not going to go, because then it's kind of like, well, if it didn't go well, I didn't disappoint anyone because I picked something that probably shouldn't have gone well. But if I do have it be a success, well, then I actually get to like be celebrated. But it doesn't work because it's inside of the same model, right? It's all inside the same like snowball, not snowball. What are those things called?
The snow globe. Cool answer. Yeah. I really resonate with that too. Like the coaches, it sounds like you like the prove it context. Like you like things that allow you to prove that it's possible. I'm the same. I'm a lot of the time the same way. You know, you're a podcaster. People go, oh, podcasting, there's a million of them. Nobody's going to listen. Not true.
Yeah.
So it's like fun to put things out, or like you said, coaching practice. Oh, it's hard to da, da, da. Like, cool. What's hard? Like, tell me what's hard and I'll show you how I can do it anyway. That I really resonate with that too. All right, Alex, it's been awesome having you on. I'm so glad we got a chance to do this. I got two more questions and one request for you. So the question is, how does Alex see the world?
This is brutal.
This is brutal. I love ending a podcast episode of "This is Brutal." That's a glowing review.
I say it's brutal because sometimes there's a joke that it's like I'm the coach that hates people. Like I'm the coach that hates people. And
I know other coaches like that.
Okay. Usually I find that coaches are very like optimistic and positive and really like love people.
It's like me.
And
me. Yeah.
And I think that I see so much potential for humanity. Like there's so much that we could be and that we're just not, that I'm like disgusted with it all. And I think that the way that I see the world is I'm like a hopeless romantic, but in terms of humanity, like I hopelessly want us to be great and be all that we could be, but it's like, I just see the mess and it just seems like the mess just keeps getting more and more messy. That's why I was like, ugh.
Yeah. So so you would identify with a bit more of, skeptical, and I don't mean that in a negative way, just, you know, like a lot of personality sets will have like skepticism is like the DISC model, for example. You're more of on like the skeptical side, which
I work really hard, really hard to cultivate the being and the mindset that to show up every day that I need to be to be successful, right?
Yeah.
I can't show up and be like everyone fucking sucks and then be successful. I have to actually cultivate, I have to find positive, I have to create gratitude, I have to look at how lucky I am, right? I have to do things because my default setting will take me way down the dark road.
Yeah.
And like, that's not going to go well for anyone.
Yeah. 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 Thanks for being honest about it. I really appreciate that. So as we wrap up here, Alex, hit us with all the different places we can find you. Everything you're about to say is going in the show notes. Nobody has to jot these down. So just to remind everybody, Alex has a book, you have a podcast, you have a website with a super cool program for everybody out there listening and looking for some love and things haven't worked, which I know a lot of people that things just aren't working. Sounds like a super cool thing to check out. Yes, we're going to get some clips of you being a villain on reality TV and anything else. So Alex, where can everybody connect with you and find you?
TheDreamMason.com. Basically,
TheDreamMason.com.
Yeah, everything's there. So you can, the book Fictional Authenticity, which is on Amazon, you can get to it through there. All the podcasts I do, and I'm not going to list them off, there's a bunch. If you want to work with me, if you want to talk to me, if you want to talk about being a reality show villain, if you want to, you know, sketch out a plan for how you can create that for yourself, I'm here for that. But yeah, thedreammason.com is the best place. And if you are more into social media, Inspirational Alex on Instagram, which I should say, based on what we just said, is supposed to be ironic. I never would have been thought of as an inspirational person. So it was a big joke.
It was a joke.
When I started to turn my life around, some of the first people in the restaurant business were like, oh, here comes inspirational Alex. And I was like, I better just own this. And I changed.
That's my, great.
Yeah, it just became, and then it just, I never changed it. But
inspirationalalex.com or your
loveadventure.com if you're curious about what it would be like, you know, to take that route instead of, you know, your thumb. Worst case scenario is your thumbs get some rest from swiping.
Yeah. And best case scenario, you end up on a podcast talking about how you met your love of your life through this same format.
Right.
Living the dream, man. It's super cool. I'm happy for you. All right, Alex, last thing for us. Leave us with some short and sweet Instagram-worthy words of wisdom.
Keep going. No matter what you're up to, no matter what you're doing, if you keep going, you'll eventually get there. So most of us fail or find ourselves disappointed or discouraged or whatnot because we give up, we quit, we stop. And if you keep going, there's always a chance.
Yeah. Thank you again, Alex, for being on today. It was really good to get to know you in this way. Record this in real time. Keep doing everything you're doing. Best of luck to you and the significant other. Keep collecting the hats. Oh, and last question for you. You going to write another book for us?
I have a book coming out soon based on my podcast, which is called How Dreams Are Built. But it's based on the podcast. It's like a collection of essentially the highlights. I'm working on something right now that it's really taxing me. It's stressing me. It's making me answer the question, who am I to write this book? So it's about masculinity. And it's kind of a sequel to Fictional Authenticity. But it's definitely a lot harder. It's pushing me in ways that I don't even know if I'm ready for it.
Yeah. Well, when you're ready to talk about it, you have an open invite to come back on and share it with all the rest of us. Thanks, so again, thank you so much. Great to have you on today. Enjoy the rest of your day out there in sunny California. And we will talk again very soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Talking to Cool People with Jason Frizzell. If you enjoyed today's episode, please tell your friends, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and give us a shout out, or take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. If something from today's episode piqued your interest and you'd like to connect, email us at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com. We love hearing from our listeners because you're cool people too.